Hi, Daniel.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am doing just fine and very happy to be speaking to you about this incredible work on Silo.
Thank you, thank you.
From a visual effects standpoint, Daniel, this is amazing. I spoke with Gavin about what he did practically. And he raved about working, collaborating with you, and how you and your team then had to expand upon what they did from a physical standpoint. But I have to say, the two things that really stand out for me here in terms of your VFX work is the spiral staircase and also the whole idea of, because you shot this during COVID, so you sure didn't have all these actors on set who were living in the silo. So you had to create all of that. But I know that when you're doing visual effects, typically you've got your horizontal and your vertical line. But here, it's everything's round. That staircase is round. The proportion of the steps is different than normal steps. As your riser, as it goes out, gets deeper. This had to have impacted your work and added a bit more challenge for you.
Yeah, quite a bit. It was quite an adjustment for us because when we picked up the show, we started talking about it. You start kind of unfolding the problem and kind of seeing what it presents to you. And the main thing I noticed is that we're going to be dealing with a spiral staircase. Now, spiral staircases are deceivingly simple. Visually, you look at them and you go, okay, yeah, it's a spiral. It just goes up. And then you realize, oh, actually, it doesn't repeat the same way the bridges repeat. And then for this floor, it doesn't repeat at all. It just changes. And people need to walk and interact with it. And then you go, okay, hold on. I'm usually doing either people in a concert, waving their hands, doing stuff, or walking in a street. But what we're used to is a bit of the, that's a sidewalk, that's a road, that's a crossing, but everything is a bit more linear. Suddenly we had to realize, oh, if they're on the, when you go down the stairs, half of the people are going to hold the handrails, for example. You go, oh, now I need to interact with the round handrail, and the stride they're taking is going to be different than if they're going on the inner part of the stairs. And that will present a narrower stride, which makes you hold the handrail differently and makes the physical aspect of how you move within the stairs be different. So yeah, so we had to develop quite a few ways of capturing movements for crowds to compensate for it, to get the physicality of movement down the stairs while still keeping the realism of someone that feels naturally walking away down the silo while feeling kind of, the way you would walk down a street, acknowledging when someone walks down a round corner, their head tilts when they're looking at a shop or a friend is different than when they're just walking on a straight line. So it presented quite a big challenge for us, and just the sheer amount of people and what they do to make them feel natural in that space.
Well, I noticed one of the entertaining parts of the crowd aspect of this series was the guy with the backpack. He pops up in several episodes and he's always running and like colliding with somebody. Sometimes he's going up, sometimes he's going down. And I don't know if that was a real person or if it's something that you created through VFX, but that gave us a good indication, if you're paying attention, as to the human logistics of movement that would then impact your work. So I was really entertained by that.
A library of light job. We had to find the balance of what is the right speed for people to be moving in the silo so that you as an audience believe it and don't go, well, if you have to run up 140 floors every day, all day, you wouldn't be running at something that's not sustainable. So that we had all those layers of analysis into what would make it feel real and go, oh, yeah, he's just in a light jog, he's in a hurry, always in a rush, but not sprinting around to get to the final destination.
Mm-hmm. Adding in the whole aspect of people walking on the wrong side of the staircase. So there's actually lanes there for people. One side you're going up, one side you're coming down. And I thought that was really interesting because it really does make it feel very much like how it would be if you were outside with streets, that there are these quote-unquote rules of the road, which led to a lot of people bumping into each other and things like that, which you would see on a very busy street. And I really love how you integrated all of that with your crowd.
Yeah, we had a very good team of motion capture performers that we worked with, and we had to build this library. And I was talking to a friend about it. We were sitting a few years ago when we just started the project. We were sitting and talking about it in a coffee shop, and it's what sells the feeling of I'm in a coffee shop in a busy city. You know, you're sitting maybe kind of on a table, someone's buying something at the register, someone's walking on the street. Everyone looks like they have purpose in their movement. And I think it's something we really tried very hard to achieve by capturing people that are not just doing a classic bank of you're either walking somewhere or you're standing somewhere. We wanted to cover everything in between. We had captured people forgetting something. We had captured people noticing something and stopping to go deal with it. If you want to shop something, if you want to buy something. And we had to give the crowd something that I don't think you can notice it necessarily, as it doesn't draw attention to itself, but it really helps sell the silo, which is people always acknowledge the height of the silo, because when you walk into a tall space, you look up some, if it's the first time you're impressed, but if it's not, you almost know that you can tell your friend that's waiting for you two floors up, hi, I'm coming up towards you. We had to build this context of how someone reacts to a lower floor, higher floor, because of the way we build the silo and extending every time that you look off the set, which was a floor. You had to make it feel realistic, and our crowd had to react to what's happening on set with the action. So when Juliet is being led up, you can see that our crowd, like the people on set, is slightly worried. Some of them are talking between themselves and whispering, and it always had to feel very natural to what would happen if you see an accident in the New York street, or if you see, you know, there's a reason for a crowd to do something or just people rushing to work.
Mm-hmm. One of the great things here, and you talk about, you know, feeling natural. I got to tell you, you gave me a great feeling of vertigo whenever we were looking down the silo. You really shine, your work shines with giving us that whole POV if we're looking down or we're looking up. Hitchcock would have been very proud of those moments where somebody's looking down, a mile down into the well, to the deep under. Was that a challenge for you? Because in addition to having to get that perspective correct, to give us that sense of, you know, we're a mile up, it's a mile down, you also had to worry about placement of lights, because we see the lights going all the way down until they become minuscule and essentially disappear from our sight line. Same thing is going up. Talk to me about the challenges of creating that aspect of the silo proper, just staring up and down this huge corridor.
So the silo was designed as something that if we simplify it to the most kind of basic shape, it's a tube that leads you down into the ground. obviously beautifully designed, and to Gavin and his team, that was just something that I think was very inspiring. But we had to deal with how do we take that, as you said, back and sell it. And one of the main challenges is the repetition that the space introduces, because it is an atrium of a building. It's something that just moves very repeatedly down. And we had to look at images of, and I always go back to those images of, you know, Fifth Avenue, New York. When you look down a very, very long street, what makes it feel far, long? Is it the distant neon light? And some of those tools were not available to us. For example, the neon signs, but we had farms and we had parks and we had rust and degradation as you move down or up the silos. So what we tried to build is this feeling that when I look down, I know I'm looking down because it's a bit more, there's a bit more atmospherics, there's a bit more rust and water damage as you move down. You look up, you see this beautiful light dome that kind of lights the silo, which was quite a challenge in its own because we always wanted to make sure it never feels like, you know, a skylight. It never feels open to the world. It always feels like someone just installed an artificial light. And we wanted to build it in a way that really gets this very vertical feeling. And one of the solutions we had to come up with is going against what our classic visual effects approach to depth is, and it's introducing a lot of depth hazing, and we had to go against it and fight it so that you're always in a contained space, meaning you can see a lot further down, so that you never get that feeling of, you know, fall off into the haze and disappearing. So you always get to see that, oh, this is really deep. We wanted to make you feel like the way you look over a balcony and you get that kind of, you know,
you definitely gave me that feeling, because I know every time I lean over something like a balcony, I wear glasses. I'm always afraid my glasses are going to fall off and like plummet to the bottom. And this is so realistic, Daniel. Your team did such a great job that as we, some of these shots where we are looking over the balcony and looking down, I kept thinking, I found myself inadvertently touching my own glasses to make sure they were on my face. That's how real this felt.
I'm glad we had this effect, because it was intentional. We were hoping people get a feeling of forgetting that it is on the screen, getting that moment of this is real. Where does it kind of end when you fall down there? It was always this. It's a very long drop.
But you also take, we also do go down into the down under. And one of a beautiful marriage of the physical production design and your work is that turbine in the mechanic room. That is spectacular. And I know Gavin said they built it up to where the rotors were, that were being worked on. So that was about, 20, 30 feet off the ground. And then you and your team developed the rest of that. Absolutely stunning. Was that entire mechanics room, with the configuration and that turbine there, what kind of challenges did that present for you? Because that is such an important part of the film.
Challenging, I'll call it sequence. It's almost a whole episode. It kind of we see in other places, but because the action that we needed in this space required us to stitch multiple sets. So what happened is, you know, Gavin, at some point the set gets so big that we're hitting the ceiling of the studio, and that's where we have to kind of come in. So because of the height and because of the scope of what we tried to achieve and that story of climbing up into this kind of item that was never opened, we had to shoot it on preset. We had our control room, we had our main generator room, and then we had the top of the turbine where they're doing their fix, and we had the underwater tank that Juliet goes into. And I think the main challenge it presented is when we wanted to have someone see one set from the other set, for we have Nox running out in a panic, and at some point it always comes up to, can we do it? Can we do it in budget and on time? And for me, talking to Morten, the director, it was important that we don't limit his ability to move the camera to tell the story. And it became a challenge because suddenly we have a character on one set running out and yelling direct instructions to a character that's on another set that's answering them. And this triangle of matching it while using handheld cameras and keeping it looking real and natural and gritty and I'll say dirty, and always kind of getting this balance of how shaky the space is, how shaky it was from the chains to the small panels. Everything was vibrating at different levels, depends on where we are in the story. And I think it's not something that kind of jumps at you, but when you look at the sequence, you do feel the pressure building up in that space, and slowly everything kind of starts to rumble and collapse until it's resolved.
No, I was just so impressed with that whole design, and I love the color and that rusty color, but also there's the lighting that was done down there that you obviously had to follow through with in your VFX design. There's a great warmth that comes from there, that it is like the beating heart of the silo. And I really love how that emotion and feeling came across on screen.
Yeah, I think it played really well. Mark Patton, our DOP, kind of always had a very specific, kind of almost different than what you expect for the space to be, the way he envisioned the lighting for it. So when he approached it, it was kind of very clear. We start with this kind of almost kind of sanitary look of what it is, and mm-hmm. then when we go into emergency mode, everything goes warm, everything goes dark. And I think the beauty of it was that we allowed ourselves to go dark. There was no kind of fear in having moments that are just in the shadow. Mm-hmm. Our characters kind of get to shine in that space, and the distance areas are just steam and smaller lights that don't necessarily, you know, not every light needs to bring up the room. Some of it is just there because it lights a specific panel right next to it, and it becomes a background. And I think we managed to build something that feels very seamless and natural, and feels like you're in the heart of the machine.
Definitely. You definitely achieved that. I would be remiss not to ask you about creating the exterior wasteland and also the beautiful greenery that we see. So we get the same set, but two different perspectives, two different images of it. Was there anything tricky involved with pulling that off?
Yes. So, I was saying tricky, but it was a bit of a, this was more of a balancing act. First of all, the look and the design of the dead world was something that we had to kind of bite into very early in the project, because we had to play. We decided, when I joined the project, I told them the cafeteria has to have that screen as an LED, as something that gives you the natural light. When something moves on the screen, you want to see it reflecting on the faces of the people. Mm-hmm. You want it to pollute the space. So naturally they said, okay, now make it. And so we built a corridor set for the characters to interact with, to get the real performances from our leads as they go outside. And then we had to go into designing how this world looks. And really the design of the wasteland had to be anchored with what we're designing for what we call the lush world. Mm-hmm. Because you wanted to have the ability to see when you're in the cafeteria and create that illusion that later on pays off in the final episode. We wanted to create the illusion that you don't know what's real. You don't know if what we're seeing here is real or what we're seeing in the last world is real, but you always know that you recognize certain items to know that it is the same world. Just to leave the only question to be what's real and what's not. So if I see the tree, it's there in both versions. Every rock is there. Some rocks are representing something different in the lush world versus the wasteland. You can see that we always try to play with the idea of what do I see here and why is it looking different? If it's a dead body, why does it look like a boulder in the lush world? Why? To kind of always keep the question coming, and obviously to create a similar world in that scope was not something we can do in the real world, and we also needed to be able to control that, you know, those transitions that happen in the end and control the balance between realism or hyper-realism and what might then translate to what is kind of hidden in the story later about what it actually is. And I think it was a bit of a nice balancing act we had to do, and quite a long challenge to build that involved two vendors to do it, design the lush world, and then the final sequence, which was done by a different vendor, by Rodeo, very nicely. And they had to rebuild that world for that kind of more revealing shot.
Wow. Just so well done. I'm curious, Daniel, did you look at the Hugh Howey graphic novel version of Silo and the first book, Wool, to get any influences, or did you stick just with the script and perhaps what was in the book itself versus the graphic novel?
So I didn't know about the graphic novel until I kind of saw it in one of the PDF files that were going around the show with design, and someone put a picture, and I said, oh, that's a nice drawing. Where is it from? So I was just like, oh, there's a graphic novel. So I did not know that someone actually went and made a graphic novel, so I went and got it. Very quickly, I realized that it's interesting, but that we're going with something different. And I think the decision to go with something different was quite smart in the way it translated to screen. Sometimes, you know, it's from the change of why the stairs are not metal and they're concrete. It all those things lend themselves into something that plays sometimes better, you know, in the moving frame, helps us make it more achievable or make sense with the things that sometimes feel a bit kind of easier. But the graphic novel, the graphics are absolutely beautiful, and I have this book, and I'm very happy I have it because it's very well done. I'm a comic fan, and that was a nice surprise. That kind of had quite a few inspiring moments, and if you look at it and go, oh, that's a nice frame. We did take one frame from that graphic and looked at it as an inspiration for the look of a frame rather than sticking to it, but we gave it a bit of a, let's call it a visual homage with the light.
Just job so well done, Daniel. Are you working on, I know series two in the midst of that shooting, so are you working on season two?
I am working on season two, yes.
And I'm not going to ask you to give away spoilers. I will just anxiously wait till it hits my TV.
The only spoiler I can give is that it's worth the wait. I'm going to be very, very excited.
You know, the books are great. I've read the books. The books are fantastic. And season one of Silo, it just surpassed my wildest dreams for how it would translate to the screen. And it's beautiful. Job so well done.
Thank you. It was always, there's always something daunting about going into a project that you know that was attempted multiple times to, you know, to get it off the ground because of different challenges and different things that we have to do for it. And we looked at it and went, going to be a tricky shot for visual effects because of the extent in real world versus what we can do. And I think it's nice that we managed to do something that people buy into and just enjoy as a show, and let the, you know, the characters carry you in a space that you just accept as a background.
If it makes you feel any better, I will tell you that I binge watched the show, all 10 episodes, twice.
Very happy.
Beginning to end. No breaks. So, Daniel, this has been so wonderful getting to speak with you about Silo. I hope we get to do it again in the future for season 2.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Daniel, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.